Before you married this good man, were you ever involved with a boy? Warren's questions struck me as ridiculous. I was not going to play his game. As a teenager, I had kissed a boy when we ditched theology class. He was now an upstanding member of the community, and I was not going to be intimidated into ratting him out. I had written a 17-page letter to Warren Jeffs about Merrill's abuse. It was a serious letter that deserved a serious response. It was clear from Warren's question that the tide was turning against me. He took my silence as an admission of guilt. I felt like a young girl in Salem, Massachusetts, who, if she didn't admit to being a witch, was assumed to be one and condemned to death. Either way, I was going to lose. Warren took a book of Uncle Roy's sermons off his shelf and gave it to me. He told me that one of Uncle Roy's most faithful wives had tried to leave him at one time. "I want you to go home, read some sermons, be obedient to your husband, and repent," Jeffs said. I was outraged when I left his office. Jeffs knew I was telling the truth, but Merrill had won. I was labeled an immoral woman and a liar. My life in the FLDS was over. I would never submit to Merrill's abuse again, nor would I go for help to anyone in the community. But Harrison was too sick for me to even think of escape. I would lie low until I could figure out another option. Harrison seemed to be getting worse. My mother and I took turns caring for him at night so I could get enough sleep to hold on. No one in Merrill's family would help me. One night, my mother called and told me to come right away. When I got there, Harrison was having trouble breathing. Dad told me he was going to have Mom take us to the emergency room at St. George. He said we couldn't call a local ambulance because they would insist on calling Merrill for permission to take Harrison to the hospital. "This is on you and your mother," Dad said. "I will deny that I knew anything about it. You'll both have to take the heat. But if you don't get Harrison to the hospital tonight, he is going to die." We rushed him to the hospital on our own, my mother driving as fast as she could. My mother couldn't risk staying with me, so she dropped me off at the hospital. I ran into the ER with Harrison. He stabilized after a few hours, but he was in critical condition. I was told he was too sick for them to consider doing any tests. The next morning, the pediatrician came and told me we were both going to Phoenix on a life flight within hours. This was something much more serious than a post-viral infection. I called my mother and told her the news. My dad called Merrill, who could barely contain his anger. Harrison was getting the care he needed, and Merrill was powerless to stop it. An ambulance was waiting for us when our life flight landed in Phoenix. We were rushed to Phoenix Children's Hospital, where 15 specialists were on standby. Test after test was done to rule things out. On the third day, Harrison was diagnosed with a spinal neuroblastoma, a fatal cancer. Harrison had a tumor growing next to his spinal cord, but it had yet to invade it. I was told that this was an extremely rare cancer that most children do not survive. The doctors explained that Harrison had been born with spinal neuroblastoma, but symptoms don't appear until the tumor begins to grow. Merrill called occasionally and asked a few questions, but without much interest. His attitude was that Harrison's death would humble me, and then I would learn not to treat my priesthood head with disrespect. A doctor came into Harrison's room that first night to do yet another test. I was sitting alone in a chair and sobbing uncontrollably. He stood there with compassion in his eyes and said, "I wish I could give you the answers I know you want to hear, that your son is going to be all right. But I can't tell you that. And I understand that this must be hell for you, watching your baby go through something no one should have to endure." I nodded. I couldn't speak. When he left the room, I thought how much kinder and decent this doctor had been to me than Merrill or anyone else in his family had. Why was I at the hospital alone while everyone else was home and no doubt judging me as a sinner? In their eyes, my son's cancer was proof that I was being condemned by God.